This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Speak Up Effective Communication, the show on the Aftermarket Radio Network focused on our communication, leadership, and listening skills. In our episode today, I'm so pleased to introduce, well, really my boss, Tracy Capriotto. Thanks for joining me, Tracy.
Thank you so much, Craig. It's an honor and a privilege to be on your podcast. We have so enjoyed having you a part of our Aftermarket Radio Network family. And really, your podcast, every week, I learn something from it. So it has been a great communication podcast and really rounds out our entire network of kind of a one-stop shop of running a successful auto business and also just personal life stuff.
Absolutely. This has been such a fun journey too. Learning to podcast is a communication platform, by the way. Learning tons from you too. So I really appreciate that. Now, here's the thing. What I want to do today is we're introducing Tracy. This is a ton of fun for a lot of reasons for me because, Tracy, you're usually behind the mic. You're usually behind the scenes. You're doing a lot of stuff. You've been amazing. And you've recently been the president of our Toastmasters Club, Remarkable Results Toastmasters, as the immediate past president. That's an official title in Toastmasters, by the way, the IPP. The immediate past president.
I'm going to add that to my email signature.
Yeah, perfect. But no, the role now as the outgoing president is that you continue to coach and mentor the new president and their term. So Josh Cagle is our new president. We'll have a conversation with him eventually too. But I just thought it was such a great time. I want to hear some of the reflection on your communication journey coming to that point. I know it was such a big deal to even accept the nomination when it was suggested for you to take the role as club president. And a lot of other people out there are probably wondering, gosh, do I have what it takes? Is that something I could do? Anything like that? Taking the leadership executive type role in a volunteer organization with an actual mission. And it's about communication skills too. Good stuff. So, hey, this is the thing. We're going to go into Tracy's story. We're going to hear from her about her past and all of the things that she's learned through being president in the club and well before that. We have a word of the day as we do in each episode, and we picked this one out just before we started the episode here. It was a good one. The actual Webster word of the day is winsome. It's an adjective, and the definition of this word we will give you after we hear a word from our sponsors who make this show possible. Did you know the Institute helps shop owners scale to multiple locations? We're the solution for building productivity, profitability, and growth. Learn more at weartheinstitute.com/business-assessment. Your partner in technology, Autoflow is able to enhance your client interactions before, during, and after the visit from a single thread. To see how Autoflow makes it simple, visit autoflow.com. Your trusted companion, ShopDog Marketing, is right by your side, attracting the best customers and building long-term growth. Call ShopDog Marketing today or visit shopdogmarketing.com. Unlock your communication insights with Inbound's AI-powered call analytics for auto repair shops. Learn more at callinbound.com. Are you passing along credit card fees to your customers? No one likes that. Express is the only 0% fee alternative to credit card surcharging. Visit myexpress.io. All right, we're back. Thank you so much for joining us today. We have Tracy Capriotto with us. And as I mentioned, the word of the day selected just before this conversation so perfectly from Webster themselves as their word of the day. And today, right now, as we're recording this, it's August 8th. But winsome is the word of the day, adjective meaning generally pleasing and engaging, often because of a childlike charm and innocence. Perfect word of the day, Tracy.
Yes, it is. It really worked out.
It did. No, I hope you can take that as a compliment too, because I do feel that word absolutely describes you.
Oh, thank you.
No, totally. But this is the thing, Tracy, the people who get to hear from you, they see a side of you. I feel like as I've gotten to know you, you haven't always seen yourself. A quiet beginning, as you put it.
I think people would actually be really surprised to hear that I really struggled with public speaking in all capacity. I was a kid in school that never raised their hand. I didn't want to speak out loud. Reading a passage out loud in front of the class was the worst. I would count the heads ahead of me so I could find out what was my paragraph so I could just memorize it and try to get it down pat perfectly. Even calling to order like a pizza or calling a doctor's appointment, like I did not want to do any of that. I had major social anxiety about speaking. And so when I tell people this now, they're like, what are you talking about? You're so friendly. We see you at conferences. And I think it really took a big transition in more of my later life in my 20s. And especially with this job now and through great mentors like you, Craig, and also your boss, Chris Cloutier, have really helped me find my voice and kind of get my sea legs a little bit.
Chris is an amazing guy. He's put me on this path as well. His mentorship inside of the communication circles has just been so priceless. Toastmasters was referred to me, as you know, by Chris. And it's been 6 years now that I've been in Toastmasters. And I think now it's what? How long for you? A little over 2 years?
Over 2 years.
Yep. Wouldn't have happened. That club that we had created, so Remarkable Results and Autoflow both sponsor the Toastmasters Club. We call it Remarkable Results Toastmasters. And anyone listening, of course, you are welcome to be our guest on the first and third Thursdays of each month. But man, this wouldn't have existed for you to even become president of. I started out in the role as president as my term ended on that first year as we had this newly chartered club. It's just getting its routine down. I approach you. I ask you to consider accepting nomination as club president. What went through your head?
What went through my head is I can't say no to Craig. I'm not going to be able to say no. You know, we're both co-sponsoring this club. I have to say yes. And that is also something that I've learned through people in our business in the repair industry. Just say yes. And I've heard so many people say that when it comes to opportunities, even the scary ones, especially the scary ones, to just say yes and do it. So you asked me, I said, sure. I'm not even going to bring up the fact that I was nominated when I was out of town. So technically, I was a little voluntold. Like I wasn't even here. And then all of a sudden, I got an email like, great, Tracy, like everyone said, you're club president. And even that first year of us having the virtual Toastmasters Club, I would sweat those meetings so bad. I have no idea why. It was, I think, just another stepping stone of me getting comfortable in the virtual world with speaking up. And before every Toastmasters meeting, I would be so nervous. What am I going to say? What is my role? I'd be looking over the notes, trying to memorize them. And I would feel at the end of Toastmasters, oh, I'm so glad I did this. So those small steps really helped. And then, of course, becoming the president, now you're in it. And now you have to take a leadership role. And, you know, through your guidance, that helped me a lot, kind of find my ground of how am I going to get my own groove when it comes to presidency. You know, you had said, have creativity, you know, make this your own. And I really love that idea. So now I'm in charge of leading the meetings and sending out the agenda. So it also really gave me great skills for meetings in general, which Sarah and I use a lot in our communication class of structuring meetings and taking kind of the stigma out of meetings. You know, this should have been an email. And Toastmasters has a really great format with the hour, you know, minute by minute, it's locked in there. And I think it really helped me learn that leadership, it doesn't mean a C-suite executive. When we were younger, especially for me, I would think, oh, the CEOs, those are the leaders, the authors, those big people on stage, like they have it all figured out. And then really it's through this business that I learned leadership comes in all roles. No matter what role you have in a business, whether you're an apprentice at a shop or a service advisor, everyone can lead their own role and have the autonomy to do so. And so I think all of that kind of really helps solidify, like I can do this. And I have obviously the support of everyone in our Toastmasters Club. It's a very supportive group.
A very supportive group. And this is, I think, is the big difference. As an adult, I personally find these sort of situations easier. And you talked about this. We talked about this before, too. When you're a kid and you're in class, is that the same experience?
Oh, my gosh. Totally not. Because I was a kid in class where you raise your hand, you answer a question. If you're wrong, you get laughed at. The teacher jokes at you and says, no, who has the right answer? That can add a lot of hesitancy and also anxiety about being right or wrong. And then you learn to almost shut down. Like, I'm not going to speak because I don't know if it's right or wrong and I don't want to be made fun of. I didn't realize how dramatic of an effect that that would have on me in those formative years, and that it is totally different when you're an adult. Also, you know, when it comes to training events, we're at conferences all the time. The adult education is really not talked about a lot in most other businesses. You know, I look at my friends that are in all sorts of, you know, businesses, and they don't have training conferences. They're not doing personal growth. They're not measuring anything like that. And this industry has a huge advantage. But I think a lot of times people might get a little gun shy about attending training because it brings back all those thoughts about school. I don't want to sit there. I'm going to fall asleep. Like, it's so boring. Like, you know, what are they going to teach me now? And it's not rewarding because it maybe hasn't been rewarding in the past being in school and going through the whole rigid system that we have. I could see how people might not understand training and going to automotive conferences if they've never been. And also with Toastmasters, if they've never been to a Toastmasters meeting or ours, you know, there are in-person ones that we encourage people to go to in their own area. But this little group that we have, we are so supportive. You're not going to feel out of place or, oh my gosh, what happens if I make a mistake? You realize this is common. This is part of the journey, is making mistakes. And really, with Toastmasters, the critical feedback and listening to other people giving critical feedback, that really clicked in for me on, oh, critical feedback isn't scary. Critical feedback doesn't mean you're hurting someone's feelings. And those examples were huge for me.
I think this is the big difference and why the Toastmasters Club is a great spot for people to flex their leadership skills, to take a role of leadership and still practice developing the communication, because this is one of the unique environments where actual mistakes are expected and totally expected, in the sense that, yeah, you're going to get feedback on it. But since everybody's there for feedback on exactly those types of things, it's a community that has a high degree of grace and wants to see you succeed. I've never had that sense when I was coming up in school either. People don't think of Craig back in the school days, small, thin kid, and super quiet. I didn't start finding my voice probably till, oh, junior year of high school. And I was just more of the class jokester at that point. And that was just the how it was. But this is, as adults, learning gets easier. I firmly believe that, as long as you continue to keep some of that brain elasticity going and trying to stretch yourself into new roles and do new things, it's not scary anymore when you're with a group of people like this. And you don't have to feel like a mistake is now a part of your identity.
The awareness you develop with Toastmasters was, pun intended, remarkable. The counter, once you take that role, your ears will never be the same for the rest of your life. And having also listening skills for different parts of the meeting, depending on your role, I always equate it to like a radio dial, where you're like tuning a station, like, okay, I'm going to be the counter. I'm only going to listen to that. I'm going to be the general evaluator. And you listen to the meeting completely different. If you're the counter, it can be hard to understand the context of what the person is speaking about, because you're doing your little tallies, and you realize that the listening skills you have are fine-tuned and can be kind of tapped in and tapped out depending on the conversation or the environment you're in. And that for me was huge, building that awareness of what we're saying, how people are perceiving it, more importantly. I think a lot of times, like especially in this generation, we're so self-centered of, I'm going to post a selfie and I'm going to do this. I'm going to the grocery store today. It can be so ingrained of like, this is what I'm going to be saying. This is what I'm doing. But we don't actually have curiosity with other people. And then it can even backfire where people think, well, my intentions were the best. So if they took it the wrong way, that's totally on them.
Oh, yeah. Shift of responsibility.
Toastmasters in communication, you learn that accountability for the words that you say and how it can affect other people, because we are all so different. So our perception of even one sentence in an email could be taken so many different ways. And if you're not stopping to think about that before you're communicating, you're already setting up barriers.
The top shops in the industry don't stop at one location. At the Institute, we work with shop owners who want to expand, whether it's opening a second shop, acquiring new businesses, or building systems for long-term growth. Some of our clients are aiming for hundreds of shops, and we're helping them get there. Ready to scale? To get started, visit wearetheinstitute.com/business-assessment. It's time for today's Suck Less Spotlight from Autoflow. Today's spotlight is on advisor eye twitches. Listen, clients like to stay informed throughout the repair process, and studies indicate clients are most satisfied receiving text updates versus phone calls. But call you they will, interrupting everything from estimating to quality conversations and your game of solitaire. That is, unless you text them first using Autoflow. With Autoflow's automated text update, your phone only rings for the right reasons. That way, with less phone interruptions, your eye twitch will definitely suck less. For this and more things that could suck less, visit autoflow.com. Ready to boost your auto repair shop's success? ShopDog Marketing is here to help you. We put customers first using AI to create standout content that ranks. Harness the power of mobile first and voice search, and let our expert team help you. Sweeten your revenue with more car count. ShopDog Marketing offers a free guide on using AI to drive more repair orders. Get your guide today and watch your auto repair shop thrive. Visit ShopDogMarketing.com. Inbound has exclusively served independent auto repair shops with expert communication solutions for years. Now, our robust VoIP platform ensures you stay connected while our industry-leading AI analytics take your business to the next level. We provide the tools you need to understand your customers and optimize every interaction. Choose Inbound. For proven expertise and unmatched innovation, visit callinbound.com and discover the difference we can make. Credit card surcharging sounds effective, but is this single most damaging action to your shop in the last decade? If you're surcharging, you're tarnishing your reputation and losing customers as we speak. Express is the only 0% fee option to surcharging that your customers already know how to use. No tricks, no hidden fees, just a smarter way for auto shops to keep what's yours and do right by your customers. Book a free consultation with Express today by visiting myexpress.io and see how the most successful shops in the country are flipping the script on credit card processors. You've heard me quote Bob Greenwood a number of times. You've known Bob a long time yourself here too. Rest in peace, Bob. One of the things that stuck out to me in his class was his message on why he dresses nice. He's wearing a suit and tie to these automotive events. And this is the thing, is Bob made a great point of, he always drew attention to it in the best way possible. He says, you know why? He would say, ask his class, you know why I'm dressed nice? It's out of respect for the people that I'm meeting with. You're worth it. And so I see communication as a sense of, like, you're clothing yourself with good communication skills out of respect for the people that you're meeting with. It isn't to try to impress people with how great and wonderful you are. It shows respect to an audience to give it the respect that communication, good communication skills truly deserves. It's not about trying to be better than someone else. It's trying to be your best for respecting others.
And Toastmasters is not just for if you want to be a presenter on a stage somewhere. This is for everyday communication. I think that can get lost.
I'm glad you said that.
People might have, you know, the stereotype, oh, Toastmasters, well, I'm not going to be a public speaker, so why would I join? But this is everyday use in our lives at work and at home. And it's so critical. I mean, Sarah and I have had multiple classes on communication.
Sarah Fraser, for those of you that don't know Sarah. Yep.
Sarah Fraser. I'm just like, Sarah. Everyone knows Sarah.
Yeah, everyone knows Sarah.
And we've received amazing feedback that really validate what we're presenting and what we're talking about is very important for today's world.
Completely. Yeah, you've heard a few of the episodes on the podcast, of course. I seem very against AI. And it's not that I can't embrace all the good that it's doing in the world. It's just that, when I see it communicating better than people can communicate, honestly, it just feels like, no, now people are going to take the easy road and they're never going to work on their communication skills again. And we're going to have this big disconnect. Like, if you don't have the AI, you won't be able to communicate good at all. You're going to become so hyper-dependent on it. I see the world heading this way too fast.
Absolutely. Technology, you know, kids are not playing outside like they were. They're not picking up the phone to call a landline home and say, hey, Mrs. Smith, can I talk to Sam? You know, those skills aren't being developed. I think about that a lot with my niece and nephew. They're 5 and 7. And what is their world going to be like when they're older? Like, they already know how to stream into Netflix. Kids now are also used to the immediate satisfaction of watching exactly what they want, no matter what time. They're not even doing the, you know, TiVo like we used to, and you got to fast forward those commercials or wait through the commercials, or there's nothing on, so you just watch whatever. You go play outside. And
the stream of immediate sense experiences, as we quoted in the last episode.
They can't be bored. Being in a car, they're on a tablet. Being at a restaurant, they're on tablets. Well, what is that doing? It's showing them that if you're not doing something, you should be.
Oh, it's absolutely the case. Yeah, I'm sitting on my desk here right now, too, is a book I pick up and take sips of, The Anxious Generation, How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness by Jonathan Haidt.
Wow.
Fantastic read, but a little bit depressing.
Yes, I can imagine.
Yeah, because no, we've made mistakes. We moved into technology too quick. But hey, that's the world we're in right now. The world that you started out in. You didn't even realize this, it sounds like, as we go back to your childhood. Jeremy Glasgow, wonderful initial sponsor of this program as we rolled out, he was on, I think it was episode 6, we called it Jeremy in the Jungle. We had the concept of being, he was raised in the jungles of New Guinea, and he came out great. He did. But when he came back to the U.S., he has the term the third culture kid, where he's like not hasn't been raised with the same experience as these people that he's around. Your experiences are dramatically different. And that was your case.
In case someone doesn't know, I am adopted. My brother and I are adopted. You know, we laugh all the time that people think I'm Carm's wife when they see us at conferences because they see our last names on the badge. Oh, okay, must be, you know, Carm's young wife. So no, that's my dad.
That means your mom needs to go with him more often.
Yes, that's true. There's a stigma there too. I mean, Bill Belichick's not helping our case at all. So my brother and I are both adopted from South Korea. And even that is something that I've started to tap into in my adult life of kind of exploring more of adoption. The initial stages of me going through my childhood in those early months, I went from the hospital to a foster care for 3 months. And then I'm being flown halfway across the world, 22 hours, to now join my family. And I didn't realize like that could have probably had a mark a little bit on just those first initial months of growing up. I struggled of wondering, you know, why was I adopted? You know, why was I put up for adoption? Why couldn't my birth parents take care of me? Did they not want me? And you kind of get that feeling of I wasn't chosen. Even though my parents chose me and I have a wonderful life with my family, they are my family. You know, when you're little and young and you're thinking about adoption and you're wondering why, that can be really hard to go through. And when I was going through school, my brother and I are really the only two Asians in a predominantly, you know, all Caucasian school district. So we looked different. And this was in the 90s. It's different today. There's a lot more diversity today, but back in the 90s, there really wasn't a lot, and adoption wasn't as kind of mainstream as it is now. I struggled with racism and looking different. And that also, I think, fed into I don't really want to speak up because I'm already different. I don't want to be more different. And I think that kind of held me back where I was so shy because I kept wondering, why do I not look the same? I'm adopted. What does that mean? And then, you know, kids just tormented my brother and I for being Asian. And that's also really hard to understand growing up. You know, we can't help the way we look. And why are we getting made fun of? And I understand everyone gets made fun of in school. I totally get that. But I will say when you're a different race, it can add a lot of baggage. And so that's why I really resonated with Jeremy's episode talking about third culture kid, because, you know, I was Asian and so I was different. But then if I did meet any Asian children, they were from an Asian family. They weren't adopted into an Italian family. They had sauce every Sunday. And so even that context was different for me. And so there was a little bit of feeling of being lost. And I think that also fed into, you know, who am I and what am I going to be doing? And that's something that we all search for in life. And I'm slowly starting to understand it more. But yeah, I think in the beginning, it was challenging. And it took some big moments for me to kind of move forward.
I mean, it felt safe to be quiet, is what I'm hearing, for quite a while in your life. And that is so, what's funny to me is like how much time you spend behind the mic in the podcast. I've heard so many of them, and I've done podcasts with Carm, and you're there, you're producing the thing. And yet when you speak, it's so on point. Your listening skills are so sharp that I feel like you've done so much more listening than most of us that now at this point, you have more to say that we should all listen to. So, I mean, I think those experiences are a blessing. And it sounds like you look back on them now as a blessing too. And you can look at it as a bit of a trough, if you will. And that trough is long and it's probably very challenging and more challenging even than you're describing in some cases here. But the peaks are there as well. And it seems like, yeah, you finally started peaking out a little bit more too. So this is good. And that role as president, big step forward in it.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. That's a tough thing. And I was so glad Jeremy did put that out there. I had a few comments from people on that third culture thing. It's like, ah, yes, that's the perfect term. You're in this group, but you don't quite fit in. You fit in with this group, but you seem a little different and all the things that go with that. But then here's the funny part for you. Now you became an influencer in the automotive aftermarket and you're a female.
Right. I'm female and I'm Asian. So there's like a trifecta there somewhere.
But no, this is the thing. And it's been so good. I mean, the Women in Auto Care group, that started to manifest itself really well. It's like this whole other culture now inside of the industry that has been desperately needed for so long. I don't feel like the aftermarket gets recognized as a true profession until everybody who's anybody, different or whatnot, feels welcome and listened to inside of it. And this industry, I grew up in the 90s too. I remember the idea of ever bringing in a female service advisor in the shop seemed like taboo because, by golly, then we're going to have to clean up our sense of humor and everything else that goes with it.
Bathroom's going to have to be clean. What?
Yeah, that too. All of the things, right? But these are all the things that really, you know, everyone should be moving towards, I hope.
I do love how the industry with Women in Auto Care and also Amazing Women in Automotive have really had a place for women. And also NAPA Auto Care is also creating a women's group for everybody. So I think that is needed, especially in a male-dominated industry. It is what it is. And it can be a little daunting when you're maybe the only female in the room. I mean, it does come in handy when you have to use the bathroom because there's never any lines. That is the plus. But I really enjoy attending the Women in Auto Care conference every year. And I love attending the Amazing Women Automotive social events that they have at most conferences now, because you kind of have that belonging of, hey, there's a girls' night and we're going. Set the guys over there. We have our own girl time. And it's a nice space to have, even if you're a spouse. You know, it's everyone is welcome. And that can also be if you're a spouse of a shop owner and maybe you're not in the business, you're still welcome. You know, you're still a part of the business no matter what as a spouse. So I'm really thankful for those organizations that have opened up, you know, a place for women.
Nice. And you won an award with Women in Auto Care, Best Media Outreach to Female Audience.
And that was my first podcast ever. I did a solo podcast. I don't even know what I was thinking, but I was so jazzed up from Women in Auto Care that I wanted to capture my experience. And so I recorded a podcast on my very own, and I talked about the challenges I had. Or I had imposter syndrome, where I couldn't walk into the breakfast on the first day by myself because that big room full of 300 women, oh my gosh, what if I don't know anybody? And I waited in the lobby for my friends. And then a huge moment for me was at that same conference, I couldn't walk into breakfast by myself. The next day, there was a segment where we were able to share on the microphone, anyone who wanted in the audience, just an experience that they went through that they want to share to maybe help others. And again, don't know what I was thinking. I was in the back of the room, my hand shot up, and I talked about on a microphone in front of 300 women, a sexual harassment experience I was involved in my early career in my 20s, and how I didn't realize at that time how significant it was and how it was downplayed by the company, downplayed by the coworkers, and how embarrassing it was for me to the point where I just said, no, it's fine. Everything's fine. You know, you don't want to be the ripple in the water, even though it was inappropriate and wrong. Now, looking back on that, you know, I wanted to share that story for other women so they can reflect on maybe past experiences and have the courage if something happens to them now to your voice and speak up, because it's really important to. And I think maybe women, especially, there's such a stereotype of, like, you know, being quiet and being presentable. And what's really helpful is I've met so many amazing people in this industry that are very aligned with the human side of connecting, the curiosity side. And I think that's what really helped elevate me in my communication journey. That's what you need to do. If you want to be a better communicator, you have to surround yourself with people that also view that as a high priority in their life.
Yeah, they're on that same journey. I'm really glad you shared that stuff too. Like, as a father to two daughters, I have one son, two daughters, and I'm fully cognizant of the fact that the world has changed, and I feel like it's changed so much for the better that sometimes I forget that the problems that you're describing for how women might feel like they need to stay quiet still exist. I wouldn't know about some of the racism that exists in the world still, except for the experience my wife has, two sisters that were adopted as well from African-American families and raised with Caucasian Dutch Christian Reform family here in West Michigan. Yeah, they stood out too. But my goodness, the stories that we hear, those are really important to hear about sometimes. I mean, just going around town, the mean things that people will say, or just how they feel at work sometimes, and the things different managers will tell them, this stuff still exists in the world. It still exists. And like you say, speaking up about it. I mean, the title of the show is Speak Up, and never really intended to be like speak up about something terrible that's happening, right? But sometimes you have to. It isn't just like, let the bad stuff go away. Speak up about it. It's the only way it gets better. I feel it's improving. I think, at least publicly, people recognize that there's a wrong way to treat individuals and they won't do that. But there's some people who think that the eye of the world isn't on them. And in that moment of privacy, they might be more mean than they would. And I know it happens.
My parents never knew of that story until I told them after Women Auto Care.
Oh my gosh. You never told your parents?
I never told my parents. I was so embarrassed that I just, you know, in my early 20s, this was a great job. I don't want to lose my job. And so, yeah. And they were really upset. They were like, you know, why didn't you tell us this? And why did you feel like you couldn't? And it was really just an embarrassment where I just didn't want to deal with it. And but there should have been repercussions and there wasn't.
Yeah, it's interesting. Sometimes that fear of embarrassment is what makes us do things. Just listening to a book on a drive the other day, a guy in the Vietnam War era was thinking about escaping to Canada to dodge the draft. And what was interesting, he was afraid of going to war, but the fear of being embarrassed by this decision and haunting him the rest of life was greater than the fear of going to war. Even though war absolutely is one of the most terrifying things you could do, the fear of embarrassment is more powerful than even going and confronting a scenario like combat. Oh my gosh.
Even the fear of being wrong, I think. And that is something I realized that I really internalize with, because when you're growing up, you need good grades, you know, get the test questions right. And you're in such a black and white right and wrong that you start really focusing on not being wrong. And I think that can be such a slippery slope of trying to do everything you can to not be wrong. You're going to miss out. And that fear is huge for people, I think.
Oh, I think so too. And I've talked to a lot of technical trainers. Obviously, we know several of them in our networking circles. And I can't think of a more intimidating course to have to teach than a group of experienced, skilled, brilliant diagnostic technicians to go and talk about how to diagnose this particular vehicle, make, model, or technology, or whatever, because they all have their processes and they all know they know their stuff. And some of the groups in that, oh my gosh, you could get crucified in front of an audience in there if you say something that goes against it.
Especially if Matt Fonzel is in the audience. You don't want that.
Yeah, you got to heckle him. That's necessary. But no, that's interesting. Yeah, being wrong in front of a group of experts, especially, I think that bar is going up enough in certain circles in our conferences that does seem intimidating. And you mentioned this too, just from your position, going into a conference, being in training, not even feeling like in a group of other women to go and sit and have breakfast with someone. I think that same fear is there for a lot of other people. So if you're listening to this and you're hearing Tracy talk about that fear of like walking in a large room, going to breakfast, that is pretty normal. And I think there's like that. I think you've given people permission to still feel that and do something here. You're not the only nervous one.
I think for me, it was, what am I going to say? And with Toastmasters, that impromptu kind of speaking really helps. I have a different mind frame when I walk into a room, especially with networking. I know some people are like, oh, networking, such a buzzword. We're not doing that. I'm hanging out with my friends and that's it. If you don't know kind of what to say, it can be really daunting. And so from John DeJulius, he's been on a couple episodes. Carm and I were able to meet him actually in person in the Transformers Institute Summit. He said the concept of Ford is a great way to kind of be the icebreaker in any social situation that you're in.
Well, sounds perfect for our industry, but I think the acronym means something else.
Yes, they might recognize that word Ford. I don't know. But Ford stands for family, occupation, recreation, and dreams. Those are 4 points that people love talking about, that they're passionate about, that are easy topics that you can dive into. You know, asking about someone's family, asking, hey, are you a shop owner? Are you a technician? Where's your shop? Those are easy questions. And, you know, we spend most of our time at work than at home. So talking about jobs and what you do, what your responsibilities are easy. And then also recreation. What do you like to do on your fun time, your hobbies? And that always connects really well when you're able to find the commonality of, I like to do this too. And then dreams, you know, those are kind of like those big aha, like I would love to do this. And kind of thinking futuristic of, you know, a timeline is also nice. You kind of can get an idea of what people's goals are, where they are in life and what's really important to them. Once that clicked in to me, like I was able to have a lot more confidence walking into a room because I kind of had my arsenal of questions that are easy to kind of bring up in topic, the very neutral questions as well. You're not asking difficult ones. You're just trying to get to know someone. But even getting to know a new person can seem challenging, especially if you're not used to kind of the networking, you're meeting new people a lot. And, you know, now I'm kind of in that routine. But when I first started going to conferences, oh my gosh, it was very intimidating for me because I didn't know anybody. You know, who am I going to talk to? Why would they even want to talk to me? And now, you know, I love going to conferences. I really do. And I've luckily have now friends all around the country that I'm very close with. And it's really expanded my bubble.
Do you ever find that you still gravitate towards the people you recognize and are familiar with?
Yes. Well, especially now. Yes. I'm like, I got to go to my people.
Yep. No, and I think that's always going to be the case for everyone. I ask that question to people a lot too, because it's very challenging, even when you are established and you have a good network there, to just remember, stop for a second, go introduce yourself to the new people who probably do feel awkward, maybe haven't learned this, don't know the Ford acronym, family, occupation, recreation, dreams. Maybe don't start with dreams, walking up to someone and say, what'd you dream about? Or what do you, I don't know, could be weird, but hey, that's okay too. That's fun. Oh my goodness. No, that's really interesting. I will say I had great, great mentors for some of the early conferences. Bob Greenwood, number one. I remember when he encouraged me to go to Apex the first time, 2017. And thank goodness I knew he was going there to meet up with him at a spot. I had no idea. I'd never been to Las Vegas. Was there by myself. And it's like, oh man, I was hiding out in my room. No kidding. It's like, that street is weird. Vegas is not my scene. And I didn't know enough people to have a large group of people to text or meet up with or that sort of thing. But you know who also saved the day over there? Eric Ziegler. You know Eric.
Oh, he's the greatest.
One of the absolute best. Eric Ziegler also is the guy. I rode with him all the way to Vision. I drove to Peoria from Grand Rapids, Michigan here, drove to Peoria, Illinois, met up with him. That's about 6 hours, another 6 hours basically in the car with Eric and Mike Prosciutto. As we drove to Vision, that was 2018, March, first time going there.
That must have been a car ride.
It was. We didn't have many moments where there wasn't a great conversation active at that time, if you know Eric and me. Got to throw myself into that one. But you know what? When somebody actually took the time to make sure I felt good going into these events, it was like someone pulling you up and pulling you in. And then you're off on your own 2 feet in no time at all. And you replicate that for someone else. I think this is something you're rather gifted at too, Tracy.
Thank you. Well, you know, like you said, I remember being the kid in the corner, you know, or hiding in the hotel room. And so you know, that is a good point to have is, you know, if I see someone or any of us see someone that's maybe alone, to go over to them, because we've all been in that situation before. And then we've all had someone come to us to lift us up and how important that was.
So let's go back to Toastmasters. Being club president, you had to speak on a regular basis. That's obviously the space where that would go. Every meeting doesn't go according to plan. Did that help you?
Having it not go according to plan?
Not go to plan.
I think so. That helped with the flexibility, learning to be flexible.
Because you do all the pre-prep. I know you're a prepper.
Yeah.
You prep.
I am.
And when things don't line up.
I think that really helped me not be as controlling, because you're right. I am a prepper. I think, though, the environment is what made it so easy to be flexible on the fly. We have a lot of fun. We laugh a lot. And I always started my meetings by bringing up something that happened in my everyday life that made me think about this club.
Seems like you had something every single time, too. There's always the recent inspirations. You brought that into each of the meetings. I loved it.
That's, you know, an important part of my communication journey, because I wanted to be prepared for the meeting. I wanted to have a good meeting. And I also wanted to have an example, because for me, I'm a very tactile learner. I'm a very experienced learner. And when I have that light bulb moment, it's me experiencing something and being able to share that with others. I hope it does help them as well get their light bulb moments.
Yeah. Let me ask this. Something I've noticed, even doing podcasts at a weekly interval, it makes me constantly tuned in to looking for things that will be worth sharing. And knowing going into a meeting that you'll be opening up this meeting, you'll want to have something to inspire others or share with others that could be valuable. Did that start to change the way you experienced whatever it was you were doing or those interactions that you were having?
You know, that is a really good point. I never thought about it like that, but I think it really did. It's being intentional and having that focus. And, you know, being intentional doesn't mean it's by the seat of your pants. You have to think about it and kind of set yourself up. So you're right. That kind of setting the stage is so important for so many parts of our lives that we probably take for granted. And especially for presenting at classes, you know, I know I need to get myself in the right mind. I know I need to do a refresher, and I kind of have a routine almost. I think that's really helped me understand and kind of prepare, because before it would seem so daunting. How the heck am I going to run this meeting? How the heck am I going to present a 3-hour class? And once you get in that overwhelming stage, like, game over, you're spiraling. But I think knowing yourself, learning about yourself, what makes you tick, what makes you reset, what makes you feel confident and comfortable, and then tapping into those, that kind of diffuses that anxiety or the anticipating, what am I going to say? Because you kind of framed it up, for me especially, like, I have it framed up a little bit. I have some notes. I review it. And that's kind of just my routine of getting in the right mind before I'm presenting. And, you know, it took a while for me to get there, to understand what my process was, but you only learn by going through it.
It's interesting, because I remember at Vision last year, we kind of gave you no time for a process to prepare something. We said, hey, Tracy, we're about to start the second half of our course. Do you want to open that up?
Yeah, another voluntold moment. And of course, I can't say no to Craig and Chris. And this is a huge opportunity. I've never spoken at Vision. I'm going to speak at Vision. You said, okay, come back in an hour. Carmen and I booked it to eat. As we're eating at the bar, I'm writing on my cell phone notes. Oh my gosh. Okay, how am I going to open this up? Is this good? Like, what story should I tell now? And I can't believe I'm going to be saying this in front of a class. And so I had a little bit of a shortened kind of time frame of prepping, but I did prep. I wanted to kind of feel like I was going to have something to share that's going to be impactful. And luckily, through Toastmasters and the classes I've been doing, I was comfortable. You know, still scary being in front of a class. Everyone's looking at you, but I was more comfortable in my skin than I ever was. And it still was weird, though, when you know, announced me as I would be coming up and kind of addressing as the Toastmaster president. Everyone starts clapping. I'm walking up like, oh my gosh, like, why are people clapping? This is making it worse.
This is what I wanted. All right. So the true intent for me on this, now, I had to be club president. My first time as club president for my local club was during COVID, and it was completely online. And I had never had the chance to preside over a live meeting at that point. And when I did get a chance as later on, it was really cool. And so what I was hoping for was exactly that, because we are an online club. You don't get a room where you get to experience what it's like to open a meeting with people and with applause in the room. And I just thought it was beautiful. It was so great. And the whole goal too, of besides that, for your own experience, was that the audience in our class had an opportunity to see what it might be like in a Toastmasters meeting if they get to attend. That was one of my favorite vision moments.
Mine too. Really, it's mine too. That was a pinch me moment.
Yeah. Nope, you did great. And then Carm came up. He gave his educational minute too. And Carm, you both have spoken in front of groups of people before, but it's just a different experience when we're trying to give what it's like in a meeting experience to be doing that with people. It always reminds me that I do wish, like, my dream is that at an event, we'll be able to actually host one of our Toastmaster meetings. We'll just use a room. We'll have one of our regular monthly meetings, and we'll conduct it in person so that the club gets that experience. I hope that'll happen. But the good thing is it feels like I saw through that entire year that you were the club president, it felt like you really found your groove. And that's what these sort of things do. You stretched yourself, you put yourself into a position that you said yes to it. Like you said yes to Sarah when you guys teach your class. That's been great for you. You did this too. I would ask this, like, do you have anything you wish you would have done different during your term as president? Is there anything that's like, I wish I did this or that? Or do you just feel like it went really, really good?
I think it went well, but there's always areas of improvement. I wish I would have had meetings like Josh has made.
Oh, I pushed him into that. But yeah.
I wish I would have done that. I didn't attend any of the extra trainings for Toastmasters until recently. Carm and I both attended that. And it was wonderful to hear them talking about DISC. And, you know, just having the curiosity of other people. I really enjoy how Josh kind of has more of a theme to every meeting. And that's something I would always forget. So, you know, it has been really interesting for me to have Josh on board as a new president, because I'm already seeing him take off in a different way. And it's been wonderful to watch.
Nice. It's good. And I got to take some ownership on the officer training thing. I didn't want to put you all through the officer training that district sometimes puts on, because it can be really long, it can be really dry, and it can be really not a great experience for new Toastmasters. So I figured I'm just going to teach the officers what I know for that first year. And so I'm glad you did do the training though. Now that you have enough experience of what a Toastmaster club can look like and versus what maybe some other people try to make it look like, you got to remember it's a volunteer organization and each club takes on its own unique identity over time. And I definitely like the fact that ours is free-flowing and fun.
Another thing I really want to set as a goal for this year is pathways. And Toastmasters has a robust website with all different pathways, no matter what communication journey you're on. They have benchmarks. I know Autoflow uses that for their employees, and I think that's wonderful. You know, these business coaches that we know in the industry, this would be great for them to tap into with service advisors, shop owners, or even the technicians.
Yep. It is the part now that our club has such a good routine. We have an established footprint. We have a good member base. Focusing on those pathways is definitely one of the goals for this year. And as my role as vice president of education for the club, generally that role in the club is going to continually push the members to keep going through those pathways. Don't stall out. Get level ones done. Get the level twos done. It'll be a good sequence of speeches. It'll be 5 speeches in level one. And boom, 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 the club gets points when you do that too for distinguishment. There's lots of neat elements to it that goes far beyond just showing up in meeting and just practicing. It's structured practice too, and you have some homework. I know that's a dirty word. No one says homework in this industry.
But I like the gamification. You know, once you said, well, if we have 3 officers to attend this meeting, we get points. I was like, points, points, okay.
Points. Right? Because sometimes we need something more than our own motivation to do it. A lot of people are not motivated to only something that benefits themselves. They're far more motivated to do something that benefits others. And I think that's a beautiful thing to behold. But yeah, the club does better the better the people in the club do.
I'm so glad that you kind of explained that, the pathways and the point system, because that was a better visual for me to kind of understand Toastmasters and how huge of a communication, you know, education this is.
Yeah. Well, we needed during your term, we achieved growth, we achieved routine, having a good established parameters of what a meeting needs to look like, I think that is just a resounding success. And it put us on the path to be where we are now in the third year of the club's charter, to be able to start doing some of the higher level Toastmaster things. It's all part of the process. So, hey, any advice for our new president, Mr. Cagle?
He doesn't need any advice. I love his energy. My only advice is be creative and have fun with it, because it really is a role that you don't think of as part of, you know, your professional career. You know, it's a volunteer organization. This is an online club, but it's a big deal. And I think kind of having that pride of, wow, I was a president of something. That's kind of cool moment. So I think Josh is going to just soar with this. And it's going to be interesting for me to experience this now on the other side again.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's a little easier sometimes when you're not responsible for every detail of the meeting. Awesome. Well, Tracy, this is so much fun. I got to ask, so if you have any final thoughts or anything that you haven't shared that you would love to share with the audience.
My initial thoughts of leadership as being big executives and CEOs, when it comes to speaking, you know, I think people, again, they have that connotation of, well, it's a public speaker and someone on stage, and that's not me. Or, you know, someone that's very talkative and very outgoing and is a big personality, that's a great speaker. Once you go through Toastmasters, once you focus on communication, you realize that is not the case. Just because someone's the loudest in the room doesn't mean they're a great speaker. Just because they're on TV doesn't mean they're a great speaker. And I think having that distinguished of what's a good speaker and what's a good communicator, you know, that is really important. So my final words is everyone can hone in on their speaking skills, no matter what position that you have in your career, because it also bleeds into your family time, your friend time with your kids. And we need that tune-up. We need a communication tune-up to kind of keep us in check, to help us move forward, trying to be concise and drop those ums. And when you're able to do that, it kind of eliminates those distractions. And you want to be able to have efficient communication on what your message is and how is it coming across and is it received.
Better than AI can do it, right? On the spot, in the flesh, right now, in person. That's where their skills come in handy. Absolutely, because everyone can click the button now. No, I love it, Tracy. And that confidence that you described, I think that's one of the most important things. I've sit in boardrooms with high-level executives on occasion, and they are often very quiet meetings. Because I see, even in those environments, almost especially in those environments, people are afraid to speak up.
Yeah, I could see that.
I'm not. Maybe I should sometimes, but no, I definitely was. Oh, Tracy, thanks so much for doing this with me. This has been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast on this side of the screen.
Thank you so much for having me, Craig. I really enjoyed being here.
Oh, this has been so much fun. Thank you, Tracy. And hey, thanks to our loyal listeners for joining us today on this. I hope this was insightful and helpful. I do want to invite you to reach out to us here on the show. Reach out to me at speakup@craigoneal.net. Email with any questions. We have a whole bunch of topics we'd love to bring to you, but we want to know which ones are important to you that you want to hear about. And we also want you to listen to the other shows on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Tracy, what's the name of that one your dad started?
Remarkable Results Radio Podcast.
Of course, Remarkable Results Radio with Carm Capriotto, the podcast that really, in my opinion, honestly, was the first podcast I'd ever heard of in this industry. I don't think anything was before that, to my knowledge.
10 years running.
It's amazing. Less amazing is Matt Fonslow's Diagnosing the Aftermarket A through Z. I think of all the people in the world, me and you probably enjoy razzing Matt Fonslow the most.
The most. Every day is a joy.
Yeah, because that's how he is in person. To everybody he meets, he deserves it.
He deserves it.
Yeah. And Hunt Demarest. Hunt Demarest is a perfect gentleman and always gets his podcast in on time.
Always. He is months ahead, actually. It's wild. Hunt, thank you so much.
Business by the numbers, folks. Numbers are not my game either. If that is for you running a business, truly listened in to Hunt. That would have probably changed my business in a number of ways if I had ever had anything like that 10, 15 years ago. It would have been great. And the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast, Brian and Kim Walker. Tracy, I get to see them coming up here in September at the Mars Intensive by the Institute.
Enjoy.
I can't wait. They're so much fun. And then Coach Chris Cotton, the Weekly Blitz. I have to get Chris on here. I've been on his a long time ago. Same for Kim and Brian, but good eggs. You really pick some great hosts. You know that?
We hand select them. So, you know, it's, we're really lucky to have amazing people in this industry as friends, as colleagues, as mentors. It's been a huge transition in my life joining this industry, and I absolutely love it.
Ah, thanks so much, Tracy. And thank you to our listeners. Remember to get out there before you speak up, listen up, and hey, thanks for listening today.
You've been listening to Speak Up, Effective Communication with Craig O'Neill on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Craig on your favorite podcast listening app and on his YouTube channel. Let him know what you'd like him to speak up about. Craig is all for advancing the automotive service aftermarket.